So when I planted this, I didn't have much faith that it was gonna make it. It was a little late for cauliflower, and sure enough with this heat we've been having, but I've been babying it and just babying it basically. The first time I've ever grown this one, this is the Flame Star. So, and the neat thing about this is, I can grow white cauliflower really good in the fall when it's cooling off, but growing white cauliflower in the spring is tough because it doesn't stay white. That all that sunlight will make it turn yellow. Well, this one's supposed to be yellow. And so this is a good variety to grow in the spring because your color is going to be what you want it to be.
Do you foresee it being a little more heat tolerant than the other one?
It seems to be more heat tolerant. I planted some purple too, and it got wiped out. So I think this is probably the most heat tolerant. Yeah, seems like it. But it ain't making a huge head, but it's pretty. Yep. Nice yellow cauliflower there. It's the first time I've grown that kind of. Should be some good eating there.
Quite a feat to grow it in the kind of weather we've had here recently with the heat and humidity we've had.
Well, that drip irrigation, you can do wonders for your garden.
Yep.
I say hey to everybody. Hello everyone and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us tonight. We've got a really good show planned talking about warm season cover crops, which is time to start getting those in the ground. So we're going to cover all of our bases there and kind of give you some recommendations on maybe what would work well for you. But before we get there, man, it's been hot.
Hot and dry, humidity's been up. We've set a record here where we live this last week. Now I know the folks up north and out west are not having the type of weather we've had, but we've had very unusual weather down here in the southeastern United States. It's causing a lot of havoc, it's causing a lot of problems we hadn't seen in a long time. So, if things don't change, and we think we're going to need a break here before long, but if things don't change, it's going to make for an interesting short garden season down here when the plants start maturing.
Yeah, it started getting real hot probably, 5 or 6 days ago. And the first couple of days, I will admit, I had a hard time adjusting to it. It was just kind of suffocating. I've gotten kind of acclimated to it by now. On Memorial Day, we actually had a little cloud cover. It was 98 degrees outside, but it wasn't as bad as it was that Sunday when it was about 103 out there.
We've had 2 days over 100 degrees here, and it's before this is in May, which is very unusual. Plants are not getting acclimated. It's tough on these plants. I've seen a lot more leaf roll in tomatoes than we have in the past. We've had people emailing us. We've had people on our group Robo talking about these. Normally, when you see these leaf curls on tomatoes, we contribute to two things, insect problems or herbicide damage. There's also a different problem where the plant gets stressed up and those lower leaves, I've even seen the complete plant, but most time it's the lower leaves will get that curl up. And it's just from stress.
Right. And I've got my tomatoes, my winter squash, and my cucumbers all on drip. But it got to a point there where it didn't matter how much I run the drip, those leaves just need to cool off. And I don't like to do it, but I had to do it. I had to put the overhead sprinkler on my winter squash and my tomatoes.
Yep. Seeing a lot of disease problems. We're seeing a lot of people complaining about, yellowing of the leaves on squash and cucumbers. And we're seeing a good bit of powdery mildew, downy mildew. Powdery mildew and downy mildew is a little bit different. Powdery mildew is actually a mildew that's white. We used to see that a lot on ornamental crops such as roses and crepe myrtles. Downy mildew is actually a type of algae. So with this heat and humidity and people watering, we're seeing some of that. A lot of people can't tell the difference between a downy mildew problem and a nutrient problem. And I hate to say always, but here's a couple of tricks to tell the reason why. If you got a yellow cast into that leaf, or your veins are green and your leaf is yellow, or vice versa, you got yellow veins and you got some green, pretty green leaves. If you got a casting of yellow, a lot of times it's a nutrient problem. However, when you start getting those little yellow spots and spotches on leaves, that's a telltale sign you got some disease problems. A lot of times it's downy, sometimes it's other things, but it's a disease problem when you see those spotches and those spotches get big and they turn brown. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of disease problems.
what's blowing my mind with this heat, and so behind my house, there's about 200, if not more, acres of conventionally grown peanuts. And they've got about a quarter of that on a pivot, so they keep it watered. But that ain't on a pivot, you would have thought we've been having just the most ideal weather. Those peanuts can grow and be green as they can be.
They are very drought. Cotton's the same way, I believe, you can grow them in a desert. Very drought resistant.
It's just amazing how they can. And I know they put a little bit of liquid down when they plant them, but that's mainly a fungicide from what I understand.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how they can germinate in dry soil and just continue.
Just sit there until they get some rain.
I will tell you one thing that is in my garden, you know, we got some things struggling, tomatoes, squash, stuff like that. But my okra is doing super good.
Loving it. This is okra weather.
And I feel sorry for those folks that didn't jump on the bandwagon and plant some jambalaya or some red burgundy, because I've been getting several solid harvests of okra about every other day.
Yes, I have too.
And those folks that didn't listen, planted that Clemson Spineless, they still waiting on okra.
Still waiting. We done been eating okra.
Been eating okra?
Yeah.
Plenty of it. And the tiger collards, believe it or not, man, those things are really, really heat tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Just haven't even wilted, still been harvesting them, probably on our 10th harvest of those. So that really cold tolerant, really heat tolerant. And like I said, I was thinking the other day when I was harvesting them, if you was a feller, I mean, most of us are gardening because we enjoy it. We still have means to go out and buy groceries if our garden fails. But if you was in a situation, sure enough, homesteader, and you was growing food, that was your only means of food, that tiger collard would have to be one of your number one crops as far as the biomass you get from it and the length of the year you can grow it.
Well, while you're still growing cauliflowers and tiger collards, I'm growing corn and okra and tomatoes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
A little head of the game of you on this corn. My honey select right here is really nice. Now, I think it's probably about 3 or 4 days off, but I had to go out and pull some to show everybody what it looked like. And when these silks right here turn nice and dark,
ain't
start drying.
They
ain't quite there, but
that was getting close.
They get a little bit further. That's when you're ready to pull them. That's a telltale sign. So if you're new to growing corn, sweet corn, when you get nice brown up here, it's time to get that out. You normally don't have a large window in there to get it. So when it starts getting there, you make plans to get that corn out because it will get harder on you. Let's open it up and see what it looks like. Hold that one right there. Well, that looks pretty doggone good. But you could tell.
Not turn your head. I said you'd sneak out there and get some of that.
Well, it would be okay. You can tell.
Smells good.
It likes a little, it could fill out a little bit more here at the top.
But ain't nothing wrong with that.
You could eat that right there just like it is.
That's sweet.
It's nice. That's nice. Probably about, I'd say 2 to 3 days off would be ideal conditions for pulling this corn.
Now this, since it's a triple sweet, will hold longer in the refrigerator than your Silver Queen. This will hold about, that getting good to you?
Like eating candy.
This will hold about, I'd say max of 10 days in the fridge before it starts getting starchy on you. So you planted your corn probably about 2 or 3 weeks before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good move this year because you got yours up and going and before this heat set in on it. Now I planted mine a little later and how many acres of corn you got?
There's 100, I know in that field.
100 acres of corn right down the road. And mine and theirs ain't gonna make it to about titty high.
Yeah, my stalks was on up there above head high, so I made a good corn crop.
But that heat just got in on this later corn, and it'll still make, and still tassel and silk and everything, it just ain't gonna get as tall.
I had a little bit of a worm problem with mine, got about waist high, so I went in there and sprayed it with some spinosad, and I think I pretty much knocked them out.
Don't look like a worm's touch, no. That one.
But now if I do find a worm or two in there, we're going to cut it out and eat the cob. The worms don't bother us a whole lot. Like you see the folks out there, if you see one and you just want to throw the whole thing away, well, that's a no-no. You just cut that worm out and wash the rest of it, and it's good.
Yeah, don't worm bother us one
well,
bit.
Well, if a worm won't eat it, you don't need to be eating it either. Think about it that way.
That's right. That's right. That does look pretty good.
Well, I'm about through.
You about through?
I can
Have you cooked any
that.
Yet?
Not a bit. This is the first I poured.
So that was a first time this trying Honey Select on the show.
Nice yellow ear there. It's not a bicolor. Nice yellow ear. And I'll tell you, folks, it's really sweet.
Well, good, good. I might, after I sample some, that might be my fall go-to right there. I might try it this fall, depending on how I like this incredible. All right, so now let's get into the main part of the show. We're going to talk about some warm weather cover crops.
You just go ahead. I'll be with you in a minute.
Okay, you finish up. Now, you've kind of out-cover-cropped me the last few years because you've had a little more, you've had more subplots, and so I added some more subplots this year, and I'm going to really be able to get
it's back. It's hard on you to say I outdid you on something, ain't it?
Well,
it kind of pains you a little bit. I could sense some stress in that voice of yours when you said that.
Anyway, I got a lot more subplots now, so I can do a lot more cover cropping, and I've got some sun hemp I just planted. We're going to talk about that. It came up in about 2 days. We got a video coming out on that next week. You've got some buckwheat. So let's mention the four we've got, and then we'll go through them and kind of the benefits and where they might apply. So the first one we've got sorghum sedan grass here. Then we've got your brown top millet. Then we've got buckwheat. And then we've got the sun hemp, okay? Now, let's start off with the sorghum sedan grass. So we'll talk about the sorghum sedan grass and the brown top millet first, because these two kind of have a similar growing habit. They look fairly similar. They both are really big biomass producers, so forth. So starting off with the sorghum sedan grass,
the reason, interrupt you here just a minute, the reason they are classified together is because they are both considered monocots.
Right, they look a lot like corn.
They look a lot like corn. They're in the grass family. They have vertical veins in the leaves and they go upwards. Now, a monocot, which is these, have a more fibrous root system than dicots. And dicots would be your sun hemp and your, no, excuse me. Yeah, sun hemp is a monocot.
Sun hemp's a legume, so it would be a dicot.
But the buckwheat is a monocot. The buckwheat has more of a taproot, and I'll show you that in a minute. But these have a very, very dense fibrous, just like grass does. If you pull grass, you see how fibrous is. Both of these have that real fibrous root system.
So just to clarify there, monocots have a fibrous root system. Dicots have a taproot system.
That's right.
Okay.
Monocots, fibrous. Dicots, taproot.
That's right.
Okay. So these are monocots, so they have the fibrous.
Right. Just like corn has all those little brace roots that come out, These are going to have a real fibrous root system. These are also going to form a really dense mat of vegetation. You're going to get some really good coverage. Now, these are going to get taller. Your sorghum sedan grass, a lot of times, it's going to get on up to head tall. You're going to get those deep roots. You're going to aerate the soils really good. Mm-hmm. And this is going to put out a lot of biomass.
Right. It's at the top end of the spectrum on biomass.
Now, the seeds on the sorghum sedan grass are about the same size as the okra seed. And this stuff, if you've got a smaller area, plants like a dream in our garden cedar. Mm-hmm. I planted some last fall. You could also just hand broadcast if you got a real big plot or if you've got a little spreader you want to use.
The rate on that is 1 pound per 1,000 square feet. And you want to plant that about a half inch deep.
I usually, on those rates we have, I usually go a little more than those. I like to plant my stuff, my cover crops, pretty thick. This, along with the sun hemp, which we'll talk about, also has some nematode suppressing qualities, Which is why a lot of the market farmers really like the sorghum sedan grass, because if you're doing some fairly intensive farming, intensive rotations, nematodes can be a problem. So this will suppress the nematodes as it breaks down.
That is the go-to cover crop if you got worn out soils that's been farmed for a long time, they're really struggling. That's the one that's highly recommended for those, quote, worn out soils.
Right. So sorghum sedan grass is a great one. One I would say probably not a lot of people have tried before, but man, it's pretty, grows really well. And if you got some chickens or some animals, makes great forage for them too. Let's get into the other kind of monocot cover crop, which is our brown top millet. And this is probably one most people are familiar with. A much smaller seed here, but yet you can still plant this with a garden seeder. You've done it many times.
Yeah, that would be the one I would probably, I do like to broadcast that.
So a smaller, lighter seed there. This stuff is gonna get really, really thick on you. It also makes really great livestock forage. A lot of people use it to set them up a dove hunting plot or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It is, again, it's a pound per thousand square feet on the rate. Another thing, we plant them about a half inch deep. All these that we mentioned today, we plant them about a half inch deep. Kind of a small seed. It's the most inexpensive cover crop, summer cover crop that we carry. So it's basically considered a very inexpensive one.
Yeah. And this one does well, would do well this time of year where you got low moisture and high heat.
Yep.
Once you get it up, you might put a little water on it and get it up, but it's gonna handle all that really well.
Tell you another attribute of it. We used to use this in a situation where we had a slope and we did some grading back in my earlier days. And we used it for erosion control in the summertime. It was the best thing for a quick mat for erosion control on slopes. So if you have got a sloping field or plot that you're concerned about that, this is it.
Yeah.
I mean, in ideal conditions, this stuff in 5 days can germinate and start coming up.
Right. And you can, this is a great one if you want to do, you know, some people are doubling up the cover crops, warm weather than cool weather. You want to plant this in the summertime and mow it and then come back on top and plant a cool weather cover crop. This would be a great one to do it because it's going to give you that mat there. As it breaks down, you don't have to worry about any weeds coming up through there.
You can actually go in there and mow this stuff down if you got plenty of time and plenty of heat left, and it'll come back.
Yeah, you can do that with the sorghum sedan grass too. I've heard of folks taking their mower behind their tractor or whatever and just setting it to about, I don't know, a foot off the ground or so, and you just keep mowing it and keep mowing it, and it just gets thicker and thicker. And
Right. It has a tendency late in the summer to get what we call rust, which is a disease on the leaves somewhat. If you do get an outbreak of that, you can go over there and mow it off. A lot of times the new growth comes back, and it helps with that problem.
And the brown top millet makes those big old seed heads look kind of like cattails.
Birds love them.
Yeah, birds love them. I don't know what the geographical distribution of cattails is, but cattails we have around the ponds here.
Looks similar.
Okay, so those are our two monocot ones, the ones that kind of look like corn, kind of grow
fibrous
like corn,
root system.
Get a little taller.
Yep.
Now we're going to talk about these other two that are just really fast growing ones that have a little different growth habit. The stem doesn't get as big. So let's start off with buckwheat here.
Yep.
Now this is the fastest growing one we got out there, the fastest maturing. So this stuff is gonna mature in 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, mine that's growing out there now is flowering real nice. See the white flowers there? Boy, the bees just love this. I went out there and pulled this earlier.
Oh my, that you're looking at about two and a half, 3 foot tall there.
Yeah. Bees is just all over it, just eating it up. And if you ever had any buckwheat honey, it's kind of a dark honey. Yeah, they really love it. Pollinators love it. I'll let you hold that. So this being a dicot, which means it has more of a tap root there. I don't know if everybody can see that enough, but you see the tap root starting to come out there? That's a telltale sign between a dicot and a monocot. Now these seem to be a little bit better on hard, compacted soils. They'll reach down there and maybe bust them up a little bit better on those harder soils. A lot of people complain about these cover crops just cutting them in and getting rid of them when it's time. And here's the key. Once these things get to a certain stage, they start going to what we call the woody stage, mm-hmm. where these stems start getting woody. Now, this was not to that stage yet, but it's getting real close. You want to cut these in before they get to that woody stage because they can get problematic to cut in at that point. I got a flail mower, but I've took my lawn mower, got a mulching kit on there, and that works great too. Lift your deck up on that mulching mower, run it over there and cut these things down, and you can incorporate them back into your soil. The key there is not letting them get too old. Once this buckwheat starts flowering for a couple of weeks, you want to get it cut in. It's time to cut it in. You don't really want these things going to seed. You want to enjoy the flowers, let the pollinators come there and do the work. After that, it's time to cut them in and let them improve your soil.
So if you got a real short window where you just maybe got a month there waiting to plant something, buckwheat is your way to go, because it's going to mature in 4 to 6 weeks really fast, going to be able to outpace those weeds.
Let me add this right here. So if you got corn, we know corn takes a lot of phosphorus. Now this buckwheat is an ideal plant to scavenge that phosphorus and keep it in your soil there for you can use later on. Corn is a monocot. This being a dicot, this is a perfect rotation for a cover crop behind that corn, because it's got a different type root system there. It's going to do different things to the soil. It's also going to scavenge that phosphorus up from that corn and keep that nutrient up there in the root zone so it can be available. You know, with your rotations, think about backing up these, like if you got a corn monocot, backing it up with a dicot, changing it up a little bit, not necessarily plant dicot, or monocot to monocot, change it up from monocot to dicot and vice versa, and it'll add some benefits there for you.
And comparatively to something like millet or sorghum sedan, this one here breaks down pretty quick mm-hmm. once you mow it.
Yeah, it does.
And it's another good one. Because it's fast, it's going to help break some of those pest and disease cycles.
I don't think it's going to add quite the amount of biomass as others does, but you got the flowers for the pollinators.
Right.
Each one of these has got particular benefits that the other one may not have.
That's right. Okay. So buckwheat there. And then the last one we want to talk about here is the sun hemp, which is probably the least, I won't say least popular, but the least known.
Mm-hmm.
And like we got a video coming out with this next week. This stuff here, folks, I got it up in 2 days.
Yeah, I grew it years ago. It's some good stuff.
You know, now, I put the water to it, but it germinated in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. It's the only cover crop that's a legume that we consider a cover crop that you can go in the summertime.
Right, so it's a legume, it's related to peas, peanuts. It's a nitrogen fixer, so it's gonna, you know, get that atmospheric nitrogen and put it in your soil. Now, these have a little disc-shaped seed. They almost look like a little bee pea, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And you can plant these with a garden seeder as well. Now, I broadcasted mine, but they work great in the garden seeder. These are pretty fast-growing, too. Not quite as fast as the buckwheat. You're looking at about 8 weeks on this. This makes a yellow flower.
It does.
And obviously, you want to get it mowed or whatever before it goes to seed.
It's originated in India, and it's not been around for that long that I know of. I mean, I started hearing about it a few years ago, but it's definitely not been around as much as a cover crop as some of these others here. It's great to work into your rotation there. It is a dicot, so you could follow up behind those monocots with some of this right here to help, same thing with the buckwheat, scavenge some of those nutrients and bring back corn. This would be another one. Now, I've read online where a lot of people are taking a lot of these monocots and the dicots, such as the millet and the sun hemp, and all these and mix them together, making a cocktail out of them.
Hmm.
I've never done that.
You've done a winter cocktail.
I've done a winter cocktail. I've not done a cocktail on this, and I tell you the reason I don't, because some of these grow a little faster than others, and I was scared some of them might shade out some of the others. That's the reason I hadn't done that. So I normally just plant them by themselves.
The sun hemp as well is noted. There's a lot of research out there that says that this works really well on over-farmed areas.
Mm-hmm. Sandy soils. It loves sandy soils.
That are nutrient poor, that you've just been farming the fire out of, and I got a couple spots like that, that this can help restore it. And so my plan is, and you have to watch the video to get the whole story, I'm going to plant this, and I'm going to follow it up with some fall corn.
That's a good idea. That's a
because
good
it's a nitrogen fixer, it's going to help restore that area, and I'm following up some fall corn. I bought me to mow my paths between my new dream garden, I bought me a little walk behind, a push mower with a mulching deck on it. And I'm thinking I'm going to be able to come behind there once this gets up knee, waist high. I'm going to mow that down, leave all that vegetation where it is, not blow it all over the place. I'm going to mow it down. And then I think I'm going to try the tarp thing, because once this gets ready, I'm still probably going to be about 3 weeks out, before it's time to plant corn. So I'm going to throw that tarp on it, and we're going to give it a try. But I think it's going to work really good.
We've had some people, I've not used a tarp system, but we've had some people on our row by roost.
Tom Matthews swears by it.
That have took these cover crops and used a tarp to incorporate them back into the soil, let them decompose underneath that. So that's definitely a method that looks we need to look at.
And the last thing to mention about the sun hemp, in addition to the sorghum sedan grass, this one suppresses nematodes as well. Mm-hmm.
It's probably the most expensive summer crop seed that we sell. However, the seeding rate on this is 1.5 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So if you look at it at a cost per 1,000 square feet, it's not that bad.
Now, on my plot that was a little over 1,000 square feet, I went ahead and put 5 pounds out there because I was struggling it and then just got a little trigger happy with it. But yeah. I got
1.5 is enough. I can tell you that. I've done it at exact rates before, and that's good if you can get it even.
I got it planted pretty thick. So,
hot and dry. The hotter and drier it is, the better it likes it.
So, nitrogen fixer and nematode control. You got your mustard in the cool weather that's going to give you some nematode control. With this and the sorghum, it will give you some warm weather nematode control. So.
Wherever you're trying to, now Johnson, the common weeds we have in gardens, which is pigweed, Johnson grass, and crabgrass. Mm-hmm. That's probably the three most common. Every one of these will outgrow those weeds and shade them out and break that cycle. So beyond those attributes that we've just mentioned today, whether it be soil building, nematode suppression, erosion control, and all those, it breaks those weed cycles too beyond that.
Yeah. Help you reduce that weed seed bank. Mm-hmm. All right. If you have any more questions about any of those warm season cover crops or maybe some other ones you've thought about out there, put those in the comments and we'll be glad to get to them. We've got a few questions from last week's show that we want to cover.
Let me read the first one there. Okay. And that's Kathy Galbraith.
Galbraith. Galbraith. Maybe that's how you say it.
How long will your dry storage vegetables keep?
So last week we talked about our storage rack underneath the barn and putting our dry stuff on there. We had a lot of people ask putting carrots on there. We put carrots in the refrigerator. They don't go on the storage rack, at least down here in this part of the world. Things like taters. I found that the red taters probably keep the shortest amount of time. Those yellow taters like the Yukon Golds and the Butterballs, sometimes I can get up to 6 months out of them if we don't get too crazy humid. Your onions, your Texas Legends, your white to yellow onions, a lot of times you can get 4 months out of those easily, 5 months. Your red onions aren't going to keep quite as long. You're looking at probably a couple months on those.
I got some sweet potatoes and some winter squash, some Seminole pumpkins that have lasted about a year.
Yeah, Seminole pumpkins will last a long, long time. Sweet potatoes, long time. A lot of you, I'd say average on winter squash, you're looking at about 6 months. Spaghetti squash, 6 months is probably the top end of what they're going to store.
Delicata on the short end of that, I think a month, 6 weeks on delicata.
So plenty of time. I'd say on average, you're looking at 4 to 6 months on most stuff. If you keep them in a nice aerated area, and out of the sunlight.
Yeah, the conditions you store them in makes a big difference about how long you can get it out of it. So invest in that storage area there and put them in the right spot and it'll pay off.
That's right. And then our last question here is from David Byrne. And he says, is it okay to transplant sweet corn?
David, if you'd asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have told you no, 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 no. But I've changed my mind. I've seen it done, I've done it myself, and it works fine. We did it a couple years at a garden we had down at the expo, had some of the best corn we ever had, and it was a fall crop. So yeah, it works. It's a little bit harder to do than some of your other crops. Okra, some of your other things like tomatoes and peppers are more conducive to transplanting. Corn will. It's generally considered a low value crop. It comes up well, and we normally don't have any problems seeding it in. But go for it. If it works for your system and you need to do it, it will work.
It is more time consuming.
It is more time consuming.
But you know, if you're conserving seed, if you're trying to win a weed race or whatever, definitely something to consider. If you got a little small plot, you know, might be the way to go.
Yep. Sometimes I'm wrong, and sometimes I figure out I'm wrong, and I change my mind.
Well, it's good to know that you've evolved over the years.
I used to say you couldn't transplant squash. There's probably a 50-acre field right across the road from us right now. They transplanted squash over, and they're doing well.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you, the conventional wisdom sometimes is not necessarily the truth. We may think it is, and we've been taught that always, but it's not necessarily the truth.
And I have this happen from time to time when I'm answering comments on YouTube. Somebody will dig way back in the archive and say, well, in this video you said this, but on the show the other night you said this. So if you see something on an old video, don't always hold it against us, because we are liable to change our minds.
Yes, we are.
So,
I'll say this and we'll close. Just as soon as I ever, and I learned this a long time ago, I never say never. Because I'm always proven wrong.
Don't say what you ain't.
If anybody has ever got a problem and I say, well, this never happens, well, sure enough, it's going to happen. So I always say, this is probably the case. And if you say never, you're going to get proven wrong.
Always.
Always.
Always. Don't say what you ain't going to do. Wise man told me that one time.
Did he?
You'll end up
eating those words, won't you?
Sure. Yep. Big old bowl of crow pie.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So hope everyone enjoyed the show tonight. Hit that share button, hit that subscribe button. Tell all your friends about us. We're glad you joined us tonight, and we will see you guys on next week's show.
Take care.